from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Add up the following words and what do you get? High-rise, waterfront, San Francisco. The answer, of course, is controversy. So it goes with a project known as 8 Washington Street, a proposed development project along the Embarcadero that would add condominiums and recreational space, which replaces a private tennis club and parking lot. The project has received official approval from all the requisite city officials and agencies, but it's also the subject of not one, but 2 citywide propositions that will ultimately decide its fate. Why the fuss? Those words. High-rise, waterfront, San Francisco. More after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Winning approval for a development project in San Francisco is difficult, and it should be. Add in development along the waterfront, and difficult can become arduous. And maybe that's as it should be, too. And so it's been for the project known as 8 Washington, a project that seeks to replace a private tennis club parking lot along the Embarcadero with a condominium project that would also include some public open space. City officials and agencies have approved it, but the project is still controversial, and it's now the subject of not one, but 2 ballot propositions, which is not surprising, because after all, we are talking about the Embarcadero, we're talking about the waterfront, we're talking about condominiums, we're talking about the height of buildings. You put them all together, and you have the debate that we're about to have on this morning's forum. Joining us to do that, Mark Farrell, supervisor representing District 2 in the city and county of San Francisco. He is supportive of the project. Mark Farrell, good morning.
Good morning.
Joining us, too, is Tim Cullen. He is executive director of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. He also supports the project and Propositions B and C. Tim, good morning.
Good morning.
And on the other side, we have Art Agnos, former mayor, of course, of San Francisco. He is in opposition to the project and opposes Props B and C. Mayor Agnos, good to see you.
Hello. Nice to see you again,
Happy
Dave.
Happy to have you join us. And John Gollinger joins us as well, campaign director for No Wall on the Waterfront, which is the campaign opposing the project. So I thought we should get started by seeing if we can establish the facts of the case and what actually is being proposed and what the site is itself. So we're talking, Mark Farrell, about a site along the Embarcadero, a sort of triangular slice of property. The long side of the triangle is the Embarcadero, and then it butts up against the city in that direction. Tell me what's there now, and then tell me what you think ought to be there.
What's there right now is a private health club as well as an asphalt parking lot. And the 8 Washington project, which is reflected on the Yes on B campaign, is something I'm fully supportive of because I believe it's a very simple, good project for the city of San Francisco. It's good for our waterfront and it's good for our residents. At its core, what we're doing is we're replacing an asphalt parking lot with a massive fence around a private club and replacing it with new housing, which we desperately need here in San Francisco, a waterfront park, sidewalk cafes, $11 million in affordable housing, and 250 union jobs here in the great city of San Francisco.
Now, to be clear about the last point, for people who are not that familiar with the project, you're not saying that there is affordable housing within that project, but this project would provide funding for additional low-income housing elsewhere in the city.
That's absolutely correct. And as we see in the papers all the time now, we are in desperate need of more affordable housing here in San Francisco. This project is going to create $11 million for new affordable housing across our city. It's something we should all be excited about.
Okay, so those are the facts of it according to Mark Farrell and the supporters of the project. Mayor Agnos, any of those facts that you disagree with in terms of what is being – what's there now and what's being proposed?
Yeah, clearly that we can do a lot better with that project because affordability is the essence of housing in this city, but also height limits, bulk, which create walls along the waterfront. 25 years ago, when we made the decision to demolish the Embarcadero Freeway, we thought we were opening the waterfront to all of San Francisco, not just the wealthy people who can afford to buy $5 million condominiums along the waterfront. And now, 25 years later, I am back out of retirement trying to keep the waterfront open with a wall that is far more ominous than the old double-decker freeway along that roadway.
I understand what you don't like about the proposal, but I just want to make sure the facts are on the table. Do you concur that that's what's being proposed?
Well,
is 134 units of housing along with open space? Is that what's being proposed?
I do agree that 134 units of $5 million condominiums are going to be built there with a gratuity to the city that the law requires for affordable housing to be built somewhere else in the city where land is almost as expensive. This is public land, David. The city owns the land where the housing is going to be built along the waterfront, and we could use that for affordable housing today.
All right. Let's open up our conversation further on. We know what the project is. We understand from Art Agnos why it's not the right project. John Gollinger, let's stay with the no side for a moment, and then Tim Cullen,
sure.
I'll come to you.
Well, the core fact, the reason this is on the ballot, the reason the Democratic Party and the League of Women Voters and the Sierra Club all oppose Propositions B and C is the fact that Supervisor Farrell omitted, which is the height limits. That's what's there now. Strict height limits that have prevented buildings like the Fontana Towers on the edge of his district, which I would think he wouldn't want another one in his part of town. This would allow another Fontana Towers at this end of the waterfront. The height limit that's there now is 84 feet. They want to change it to 136. That's almost twice as high as the old freeway. That's the fact on the ground. The other fact they omit in all their ads, I have a stack of them here, every voter's gotten them in the mail, they say parks, not parking lots. They say they're going to turn a parking lot into a park. That's not true. That parking lot, which is the public land, becomes luxury housing. They're going to stick a little green space at the other end of the project, adding about a tennis court to what's already there.
So let's just stay with this for a moment, and then I'll ask you to respond on the height question. But on the public space question, as I understand it, more than half of the triangle is public space, correct?
No, that's not true. Most of that triangle will be luxury. Currently it's owned by public land.
But in terms of what will be there, there will be half of the triangle is going to be public space.
That's their claim. No, two-thirds, because what they do is they include in that calculation, they include the private luxury health club that they're going to build, which will be closed to members only. They include interior space in the luxury condos. They include thousands of square feet of grass that are there now.
Okay, so it's hard to argue that it's less public space than a parking lot and a private tennis club, which is what's there now, right?
Well, the parking lot becomes private, stays private. It becomes private housing. And they're replacing a private club with another private club.
Tim Cullen.
Half the size.
This sounds really complicated, but I don't think it's that complicated. First, I'd just like to remind listeners that we're talking about a project that's been approved by five city commissions. It's been approved by the Board of Supervisors on two votes and the State Lands Commission. This has been years in the process. The project that's before the voters is what they've approved. We're sort of here because the freeway came down, and now we have a terrific generational opportunity to make the waterfront look like we want it to be. And the remaining undeveloped land, let's face it, is mostly parking lots. Excuse me. On the question of the open space, it's not that complicated. You take a 23,000-square-foot parking lot that's ugly and on some of the most valuable land in Northern California, and after it's been moved around and the project is designed, let's be perfectly clear, we get 30,000 square feet of privately maintained public open space. That's for all the people of San Francisco.
So that much – say the numbers again for me.
There's an existing 23,000-square-foot surface parking lot that anyone can see from the Embarcadero. And what we get – the people of San Francisco get in return is at the north end, a public park – includes a children's playground, and then we get open space that does not exist now that opens up Jackson and Pacific Streets to the waterfront. And that's – you don't get many opportunities to do that.
So there is more cumulatively from your side of the aisle here, there's more open public space available to anybody. If I don't live there, I can walk there.
Absolutely.
My kids can play on the playground, so forth and so on. Mark Farrell.
And I appreciate the comments about the height limits, and I respect Mayor Agnos and Mr. Gollinger very much. However, I think that argument to me is the height of hypocrisy, because what you have is right across the street, the Golden Gateway Towers of over 200 feet tall. And so to claim that we're building a wall on the waterfront, we're actually taking a 200-foot tower and stepping down to the waterfront and having a very aesthetically appropriate development here in San Francisco. And the opponents of this project who are funding this campaign are principally a couple that live in those towers that don't want their views blocked and Boston Properties that owns the Embarcadero Towers. This is a $16 billion public company that has $1 billion on their balance sheet. And those are the ones who are funding the campaign. So you really need to dig deep about who's opposing this, with all due respect to my opponents here today.
Let's have the other side come back on the height question, because that's so much of what you read about. It would change. It would change existing rules, correct? Everyone agrees on that. The current rule is that a building can be 84 feet. This one of the buildings would go up to 136, so 52 feet higher. So that's a fact we can all agree on. But you hear Supervisor Farrell, Mayor Agnew, saying, look, there are bigger buildings elsewhere. This is on the city side. It's not really on the water. It's on the city side of the Embarcadero. Come on.
City policy historically has been to step down buildings as we approach the waterfront.
Tell me what step down
means. It means lower the heights as we get closer to the waterfront and including the land on the land side. So the Golden Gateway is a taller building, but that's far back compared to where this building is going to go, smack dab up against where the old waterfront freeway was, where the Embarcadero Freeway was. So there's a lot of space backing up toward the city side. It's not literally a side. It is back from the sidewalk.
Who does it harm?
Pardon me?
Who does it harm?
It blocks people's access to the waterfront, blocks the...
How does it block access to the waterfront?
Because this is the first brick, if you will, in a series of buildings built on public land, by the way. This notion that this parking lot is some kind of a negative thing, that's because the city hasn't done anything with it. We could do a lot better, but right now we're using it as a parking lot.
I would propose... You're not saying keep the parking lot.
Of course not. No one is. And the city has been slow to develop it because the financing has been difficult. It's now flowing because the waterfront has become the Gold Coast of San Francisco. We can build public housing of the same size that fits within the height and bulk limit. I don't mean low-income public housing. I'm talking about middle-income housing.
I want to get...
One last point, Dave. We saw in today's paper that San Francisco is number one in the country for the least affordable for middle-class housing. We could put it right there at 8 Washington and service the people who we want to keep in the city.
It's a hugely important point, and I'm just going to set it to the side for a moment because I want to debate fully this question of affordability and housing. Mm-hmm. But I want to push for a moment more on this question of who's hurt by this and who's access is being blocked, because Supervisor Farrell is saying that your campaign is essentially just being supported by a couple of well-to-do folks who are concerned about their view.
Well, he hasn't read the campaign finance reports that just came out yesterday. His side is funded, has spent $1.8 million, mostly from the developer, $150,000 from Cahill Contractors, who supports Mr. Colin's group. They're the ones who want to build this project. We've spent $500,000. We've got 1,000 donors from across the city. And yes, people who live in the area and own property recognize that bulking up the waterfront and raising these height limits will diminish property values for all. So yes, they've stepped up too. But this is on the waterfront. It's hypocrisy for them to say this is not on the waterfront and call their campaign Open Up the Waterfront, which is what their campaign's called. We've always had a clear blue line in San Francisco, as the mayor pointed out, on one block on either side of the Embarcadero. That's why the height limit is lower there and why we're fighting in the first place.
I think it's fair to say that you both may be engaging in a bit of hyperbole, open up the waterfront versus wall on the waterfront. Well, I mean, it's obviously not a wall on the waterfront.
Take a look at the Fontana Towers. Supervisor Farrell asked you, are the Fontana Towers a wall on the waterfront? And if so, why do you want to build another one in someone else's part of town?
I think the Fontana Towers were one of the worst planning decisions the city of San Francisco ever made. What you have on the Fontana Towers is a sloped down topography coming to the water and huge, massive towers on top of that. What you have at 8 Washington is 100% completely different. Again, across the street, with all due respect to Mayor Agnew, across the street, literally across the street from this project, you have a 230-foot tower. And we're going to step down. The tallest of the 8 Washington Towers is about 136 feet. To boot, if you drive east on Jackson Street and try to get to the, towards the waterfront, you're going to run into a big green fence that blocks all access to the waterfront.
But no one's saying that they want to keep the big green fence.
Not.
I mean, it's everyone agrees that there are better uses than a private tennis club and a parking lot.
Correct. But if you keep the tennis
Tim
courts,
Coleman.
how do you do away with the fences? The fences have to stay. And so this no wall on the waterfront is deeply ironic. I would say to anyone who's interested in voting on it, you should go down and walk around it. Look at what the existing wall is there now.
Let's focus on the housing question. I want to come to you first on this, Tim Coleman, because as executive director of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition, I assume that creating more affordable housing in the city is of something of import to you.
Absolutely.
So why is this the best route to achieving this goal? You heard Mayor Agnos make an impassioned plea for this ought to be everyone's waterfront. It ought to be a waterfront where it's not just high-end condos. It ought to be a place where other people can afford to live. Why is this high-end project something that you think in the end benefits more affordability across the city?
And I completely agree with Mayor Agnos. He's right. There is a terrible housing affordability crisis that exists in San Francisco right now, and it's getting worse. We are interested in more solutions, housing solutions for San Franciscans. But here's the basic. After you strip away all the heated campaign rhetoric, there are two simple choices. One is going to preserve a parking lot in a private club that pays the city about $100,000 a year. That's one choice. We, you know, voters will get to choose whether that's a good use or not. The alternative that we support is one that's going to extract the value of the land, which is extremely high, and is going to put in a project that's going to pay the city $7 million a year. That the difference in the two alternatives is a multiple of 70, a 70 times better outcome. And what the project in specific terms does that we're interested in is that the developer would give the mayor's office of housing a check for $11 million. By itself, that's a very, very significant amount of money for an agency that's functionally broke. But let's be clear, the mayor's office of housing does excellent work with it, and they can leverage that to something on the order of $20 million. By their own metrics, what this project will deliver is 50 to 55 affordable homes for families that would never otherwise have a chance to get them.
Where?
It's pure speculation.
Where?
The mayor's office of housing does a terrific job in delivering
Granted.
Affordable housing.
Where?
And how about Broadway and Sansom? Right close by. There's housing going there.
Before we get into the specifics of where that housing might go, I just want to debate the proposition for a moment. Yeah. So Tim is making the argument that this is going to generate a lot of money that then can be used to build more housing. Well, I take your point, Mayor Agnos. The question is where that would be. But that's a persuasive argument. Well, that's one way of creating more affordable housing, is it not?
That's an
John Gollinger.
That's an argument. And then his group and his group alone, every affordable housing group in town opposes Prop B and C. The Affordable Housing Alliance, Housing Rights Committee, the Tenants Union, AIDS Housing Alliance, SF, they all are vehemently against this. He stands alone. And developers who want to build this back his group, so I understand it. But what they're proposing is that luxury housing is what we need and that we're letting developers off by writing a check. That's not what our inclusionary housing ordinance was designed to do. We need affordable and middle-income housing to be actually built. And developers like Simon Snellgrove, whose project this is, want to build more luxury housing. On my way here, I passed a sign on Harrison Street called Life Above All on one of the many luxury housing projects being built right now. And I think that stands for what this project is about. $11 million is about 2% of the $500 million plus a profit that the developer would sell these condos for.
We're not
and it's
allowed
a check that will maybe be used someday somewhere. And that's
Tim Coleman and then Art
Agnos. Yeah. We're not allowed the luxury of pursuing ideology. We're much more focused on practical outcomes. And it's just as simple as this. One of these outcomes is not going to build anything. You'll keep the parking lot. One of them actually physically will, and I can't say it more clearly than that, we'll build 50 to 55 homes affordable to people that would never otherwise get them.
So, Art Agnos, come back on that fundamental point because what's the alternative? If this doesn't get built, then what would you like to see happen?
How much
time would that take before it would generate more affordable housing?
The timing depends on the energy and the commitment and the will of the mayor and the Board of Supervisors.
Well, the mayor supports this project.
I know. And it's what it does
is create economic segregation by saying rich people who can afford a $5 million condo can live on the waterfront. Everybody else with the $11 million set aside, which could build you really about 10 or 11 units, not the 55 that is being stated here, somewhere else. I want people middle income. The struggle is really almost lost for poor people to live on the waterfront. Yeah. Mayor Feinstein did that when she gave and used public land like this to Delancey Street to build 500 housing for 500 people to rebuild their lives. I gave and used public land like this over at Bayside Village and South Beach Point for people of middle income needs to live on the waterfront. We can do the same thing with this because we own that land. No, it's not private. It's publicly owned land. And the people of San Francisco, to answer Supervisor Farrell, who's got great manners, but his facts aren't as good. and that is this passed all of these regulatory and city bodies? Sure, because there was a lot of power financially and politically behind it. But we've got to avoid a mistake like Fontana East and West and like the Embarcadero. We've got a history in this city of saying, who the hell did that? And then we stop it. Fontana East and West had five more just like it. We don't want this mistake to be made when there are alternatives that can be used for housing for middle-class people on the waterfront.
We're going to have to take a break in just a moment, so I want to get out our phone number because I know lots of our listeners want to weigh in on this. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Post your thoughts on our website or Facebook page as well. Before we go to our break, though, Mark Farrell, I just want to pose this fundamental question because Art Agnos makes a persuasive point, which is not let's keep it as it is, not let's keep the private tennis club and the parking lot. Let's build something, but let's build something that is more affordable than 134 highly priced condominiums. Come back on that argument.
So, and again, I appreciate Mayor Agnos and having good manners as well, but I would state that Mayor Agnos' facts are completely wrong here. What we need to do, we need to use common sense as we develop across San Francisco. And when Mayor Agnos, when we built Bayside Village and that area in Delancey Street, that's when there was nothing around there. There were warehouses and vacant land. South of Market and Soma has boomed in the last few decades.
Does that mean only high-end buildings can be?
No, but I want to be smart. The reality is we need to find a lot more public funding for affordable housing across the city of San Francisco. It makes zero sense to build affordable housing on some of now what has now been developed as the most valuable land not only in San Francisco but across California along our waterfront and use that for affordable housing. It is much more prudent for the city of San Francisco to use as much money as we can to extract out of those projects and build more units of affordable housing in other parts of San Francisco.
Because it would generate that much more. If you put affordable housing there, you're not going to gin up as much money to build it elsewhere? Is that the
argument? You're not going to gin up as much money and you're not going to be able to house as many people. Look at the 55 Laguna project now that's going on the foot of Market.
Before we do, we're going to take a break and we'll come back and discuss all of this when we return. We'll talk about what is the best way to create more affordable housing in the city. Is this the best use of this valuable triangle of property along the Embarcadero? What about the question of raising heights? We'll get into all of those questions when we return. We want you to join us, and I'm shocked to say that our phone lines are already full. 866-733-6786 is the number. Email us at forum@kqed. Post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website, and we will be back to continue with more in just a moment. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our topic this hour, the project known as 8 Washington, a waterfront development project that would build 134 high-end condominiums, also open up some public space for people along the waterfront. We're debating whether or not that's what that land ought to be used for. We're joined by Art Agnos and John Gollinger, who oppose the project, Tim Cullen and Mark Farrell, who support it. This is key to San Franciscans because it's something people are going to have to vote on November the 5th, which brings us to our first comment from Sally, who writes, why am I being asked to vote on this? Isn't this crazy? Hasn't this project already passed all the government agencies? Hasn't it already been approved? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. Great question, Sally. Thank you. two propositions on the ballot, propositions B and C. Of course, you have to first wonder why there are two, but to be simple about it, yes votes on both are supportive of the project, no votes are against the project. Why are there two propositions? First, Mark Farrell.
The opponents of this project, and again, you mentioned this is a project that had been vetted through five different commissions, a state lands commission. I voted on it multiple times at the Board of Supervisors, close to 100 community meetings, and also 7 years of planning in the process. This has been approved by the elected body and the commissions here in San Francisco. And the opponents of the project decided to put Proposition C on the ballot. And Proposition C is very disingenuous because it takes a small portion of what the 8 Washington Project is and asks people just to consider that. So those of us who support this project and believe that the voters of San Francisco, if they're going to be forced to vote on this issue, should vote on the entire project itself. So Proposition B is the ballot proposition that it exactly mirrors what the 8 Washington Project is, that was exactly in front of me when I voted on it at the Board of Supervisors, and what every San Franciscan should support.
So it sort of seals the deal on ratifying what your board has already approved.
Exactly. And again, the opponents of this project wanted to take a very politically poignant part of this and just place that on the ballot. And again, this is so disingenuous. And we should not – the voters of San Francisco should not be having to vote on an issue like this. This has been vetted for 7 years throughout the – planning process of San Francisco and voted on by so many elected and appointed bodies. The voters of San Francisco should not be burdened with this, but if they're going to vote on it, they should vote yes on B.
John, respond to Sally's question. Why should I vote on this?
Well, the San Francisco Examiner, which had supported the project, came out against Propositions B and C just this last week because they would set a bad precedent. And what the supervisor didn't say is Prop B was put on the ballot by the developer with some additional sweetheart loopholes for them. It would lock in forevermore what's in this proposition. It would do an end run around the planning process. Prop C is a referendum that hasn't been done in 20 years. It challenges a decision of the Board of Supervisors to raise the height limits. Most of his colleagues at the board have abandoned these propositions. Only two other supervisors of the majority that approved it are supporting these propositions. The rest are either against or are staying out of it. And Proposition B includes, former city attorney Louise Rennie, who couldn't be here today with us as well, but she's come out strongly, not just because of the spot zoning that both propositions represent, but because allowing a developer to take the ballot and use it as a tool to push through a project by calling it parks when it's really about height limits for luxury condos is a horrible precedent that we'll be suffering from for years.
All right, Agnos, as a former mayor, I'm just interested in your point of view on this question of what people should vote on and whether or not it is useful to have the ballot play this role.
Oh, absolutely. In San Francisco, we've always corrected mistakes by politicians. When they are influenced, let me just be very candid, I was in the business. I understand it. You get contributions. For example, Mayor Lee got a $10,000 contribution for his deficit with the America's Cup, which is $7 million short from this developer. So all of that plays a role in influencing perceptions and thoughts. The various commissions that we're talking about, they're all appointed by the mayor or the Board of Supervisors who take their cues from them. So the ultimate decider in correcting a mistake, or in this case, avoiding a mistake, are the people of San Francisco. And so the neighbors and the people from around the city have come together, raised their own money out of their, $100 to $500 a piece in order to correct and avoid a mistake made by the politicians.
One more point on this, and then we'll go to our calls. Tim Collins.
I think it's kind of sad, and it feeds into the cynicism San Franciscans have about their city process, is that after years of public process and hundreds of hearings and thousands of San Franciscans participating, the reason that our opponents are saying it went against them is because they're all corrupt. And that kind of discourse is toxic to civic affairs. And, the Chronicle wrote a brilliant editorial, and it was just thoughtful and understated. This is politics. The No Wall people figured after all 7 years of process, it didn't go the way we want it. Let's try another gambit. And so politics, shocking to say, put Prop B on. And so it's tough to justify the toxic process that we have around land use in San Francisco. But there you have it.
Just vote no.
John in San Francisco has our first call. John, go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Great show. I'm born and raised in San Francisco. I have four kids, seven grandkids. We use the waterfront all the time. But the happiest day in our lives is when they tore that freeway down. And now you're asking us to look at this monster so 134 multimillionaires can prance around in the waterfront? This is our waterfront, San Francisco's waterfront. The people have a right to vote on this.
And
vote no on it.
John, can I just ask you, as a lifelong San Franciscan, what is it that rubs you so wrong? Is it who is there or the height of the building? What is it that says to you, this is not the San Francisco I want?
I made my living in the San Francisco waterfront for 35 years as a Teamster. I love the waterfront. You know, it not only bought me a home, it was important to me. You know, I don't care if people live on the waterfront, but why do we have to, you know, why do we have to block off everything else to have people live? Why can't they build their condominium somewhere else?
Yep. John, thank you. Mark Farrell.
As a born and raised San Franciscan, I'm someone who's sitting here today saying vote yes on B and open up the waterfront. I don't believe, and we can agree to disagree, but I don't believe looking at a concrete asphalt parking lot and a walled-off health club is something that I want to look at on our waterfront. What the 8 Washington Project does and the Yes on B proposition does is allow housing to be built, but also open up all of the streets, remove the fencing, build a new park, and allow everyday residents of San Francisco and our visitors to enjoy the waterfront finally.
But speak more directly to John, who you could tell from what he feels. He's a Teamster. He worked on the waterfront. He wants that waterfront to be of him and of his family. He doesn't want it to be for people who can afford multimillion-dollar condos. Speak to that.
And I respect John, and I would love to talk to him in person and sit down in detail about what his opinions are. But I don't see why looking at a concrete asphalt parking lot that with a chain link fence around it and then a health club with a green fence around it where you can't even see through to the waterfront makes any sense at all.
Dave, that's a red herring. The parking lot was created while we bank that property waiting for the appropriate correct project to be built there. It can be fixed tomorrow by the port. They own it. The city owns it. The supervisor can direct that something be done right now about the fence because that's also put up by the people who own it. The city does. So this is city land. The city and people in it have a right to participate in the decisions about public land, and that's what this is.
So this is a fundamental point, it seems to me, because the one thing you all agree on, I think, is that having a parking lot there and a private tennis club isn't necessarily the best use of that triangle. So you all agree on that. Tim Cullen, what the mayor and John Gollinger are saying is, look, we don't want to keep the parking lot. We want to build something. We just don't want to build what you want to build.
But, well, what they're neglecting to say is that it was put up for an RFP twice, and this is the response.
RFP meaning?
Meaning a request for proposals. The city of San Francisco asked for proposals for it, and this no one else came forward. This is what came forward. I'd like to talk to John's concern and his anger and fear about what's happening on the waterfront. What's so mystifying to me is that the No Wall people have successfully inflamed and scared people, and there's this narrative that the millionaires are coming. They're coming to our city, and that
They're
is
here.
So bad.
They're here, Tim.
That is such a bad outcome that we've got to turn down 50 to 55 affordable homes and $100 million to the city, and that's going to teach them a lesson that they'll never forget. It seems to me we're cutting off our nose to spite our face if we take that approach.
I think that's one more point on this, John Gollinger, and then I'll go to our next call.
That kind of thinking is assumes that San Francisco voters are stupid and don't know what's at stake. We've actually voted on our waterfront before. The last time was 1990 when the port and the business community and people like these two across the table wanted to build hotels on our piers and gentrify and upscale all of our waterfront. The voters weighed in and there was no waterfront plan at all. There had never been. The voters approved a proposition in 1990, Prop H, which required the port to create a waterfront land use plan for the first time. What's happened since then is the port has set that aside and let developers, as Tim Cullen said, there was one bid for this project. This developer and the port took one bid and figured they'd get some free money.
And you're confident there would be others and better?
There, in fact, I sit on the waterfront advisory group that the port appointed for this part of the waterfront. We're excited to use this space. There's three other lots just like it at Broadway, Green, and Bay that are ready to be done, something to be done with. The question is, do we lift the height limits and take what comes at us, or do we decide what we want on the waterfront? And
briefly, Mr. Mayor, then I want to go to our next call.
David, John's right. I was the mayor in 1990. I made a mistake. I proposed a hotel on the land side on a parking lot, and it was a mistake. And the people of this city corrected that mistake by chastising me and saying, don't do that, even though we were going to build a cruise ship on Piers 3032. So once again, the people of this city, by voting no on B and C, have a chance to correct the mistake, as earnest as it was by a sweetheart over there and a supervisor, but it was a mistake.
Let's hear from Alec next. Alec, go ahead.
For the opponents, how do you justify being bankrolled by a Wall Street company, Boston Properties, that is building the tallest building on the West Coast, the 1,000-foot-tall Transbay Terminal Tower, just because they're afraid of losing a small part of a few of their lowest-level office views?
So this is a little deep in the weeds here that Alec is raising, but it's an important point. Sure. Supervisor Farrell raised it earlier, that there's some hypocrisy here is the charge, because you, your own group, which is against this proposal, is taking money from a group that's responsible for big buildings.
Well, first let me say I recognize the voice. It was Alec Bash, who's a proponent of Prop B. I debated him last night, debated him dozens of times, and he tries to make that point to shift the attention from the $1.8 million the developers put in and the handful of donations they've got.
But just speak to his question, though, if you would.
Sure. 1,000 people are supporting our campaign with their hard-earned money. And yes, one of them is a property owner in the area that owns an office building away from the waterfront. They recognize that property values for all will go down if we start spot zoning here and there on the waterfront.
And
so, absolutely, they're supporting
and to build their building, they played by the rules. They didn't seek exemptions like these guys are doing to bust through the height limits.
Let's return to the height limits for a moment. And then, Alec, thanks for the call. And we'll get to Lee in just a moment. But this height question, to be clear, this exemption to go from, what is it, 84 to 136 is just for this location, right? It's not raising the height limit all across the length of the Embarcadero, right?
Absolutely. And what we're looking at, and I encourage every single listener and voter in San Francisco to go to the website, openupthewaterfront.org, and really take a look for yourself at the picture of what's being proposed. Across the street, we have a 230-foot-plus tower. We're going to step down the heights to the waterfront. This is one of the most appropriate projects I've seen come across my desk in my close to 3 years of the Board of Supervisors in terms of the aesthetics and fitting in with the neighborhood. And to boot, it's going to open up all of the streets and provide parks for the residents of San Francisco. The people that are opposing this, with all due respect to my opponents here today, don't want to see anything built right there. They want the status quo. And we don't want a parking lot and a walled-in fence.
That's absolutely false. Like, I want to know if Supervisor Chu, whose district this is, opposes the project and has made, and tried to stop it. I want to know if Supervisor Farrell would agree with the proposal in his district on his waterfront to upzone the height limits there and build a building 12 stories tall. Would the answer be
yes or
no?
You want to talk about a red herring. We do not have any 230-foot tall towers
across the street.
Hang on. One at a time, please.
You have a waterfront.
Go ahead. Supervisor Farrell, go ahead. Answer.
Absolutely not. We do not have a 230-foot tall tower right in front of our waterfront where there's an opportunity to build between that and the water. That situation,
that's not on the
waterfront. That is exactly what we have.
All right, time out, guys.
B.
Let's not debate whether or not there should be high towers in Pacific Heights or elsewhere. Let's stay with where we are right now. I want to read some of our callers. Kate writes, I resent the fact that the developer says there's a recreational space. The park is a little triangle at the end of the development, no bigger than a tennis court. It would not be open to the public. True, false?
False.
Fay writes, sell off public land to build $5 million condos? Even worse is the – well, let's not get into all the rest. It goes into the warrior question. We'll bring Mayor Agnos back another time. But sell off public land to build $5 million condos is not something that Fay support. Brad writes, I work for a real estate developer who just opened a luxury apartment building in the city, and we have affordable housing provided within the project as required by the mayor's office. It has been a big success. Mm-hmm. So let's come back to that point. Do you, Mayor Agnos, you know how all this works.
Sure.
The money that would be generated here, Tim Cullen is saying, would build 55 units. Do you fundamentally not believe that?
No, I don't. I think that's a gratuity. I think it ought to be a lot more on the site. On the site. When Mayor Feinstein used public land on the waterfront, she insisted that any private development be include affordable housing on site so that middle-class people, which is what we're talking about, could live on the waterfront. And the notion that we're going to build it somewhere else, just look at today's newspaper. Middle-class people in this city can't buy a house if they make $80,000. And the affordable housing that does exist in Bayview, there's a picture of it, $409,000. That's affordable.
So
and that's where
so why not have a mixed use
somewhere else? Well, I think it ought to be right on the waterfront.
And why not have, Tim Cullen, some sort of mixed use project so that you would have something that brings in a lot of money,
thank
and supports revenue and can gin up more money to build affordable housing, but also provides a certain number. That happens in lots of places, a certain number of units that would be affordable.
Yeah, two things. The fundamental question we're debating here is, should the enormous value of the public land at Seawall Lot 351 be extracted and put to wider uses, or should it be put to very, very narrow uses? And I'd like to give a concrete example of what this funding, this $11 million means. There's a terrific project at 55 Laguna right on Market that was dead in the water for years because the city had no money to build the affordable housing component of it. They just got $6 million. The project moved forward. That built about 100 units for elderly LGBT folks. And similarly, I just can't understand that how the a project that's going to provide funding to a good agency that's broke, the Mayor's Office of Housing, that uses it very well for real San Franciscans, if we turn down the project, we get nothing.
Let me hear from another listener who wants to speak to the same question, and then I'll get both sides to respond. Lee has been waiting patiently. Lee, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. You know, recently the court held that the affordable housing fee requirement is subject to challenge as an exaction, and that it could be challenged during the approval process. And there's also another case in court that will rule on whether an affordable housing fee requirement is constitutional, especially if the local government has not made the findings required. That's
okay.
Why I think there's a loophole for Mr. Snellgrove and not spending his $11 million on low-income
housing. All right,
Lee,
good question.
Hey, this is land the city owns. This is land the city owns. And what we're seeing when we talked earlier about precedents, that this the approval of this kind of a project sets a precedent for other developers along the waterfront who will come in and seek two things. One, break through the height limits. We're seeing it already in other parts of the waterfront. We'll talk about that later. And to reserve it for Mr. Colin's 1% so that the 99% will not have a place to live in the eastern side of the city, much less the waterfront.
I want to just stay with Lee's question, though, for a moment.
That's the fundamental question.
Because
who's going to live in San Francisco? Will it be the 1% that Mr. Cullen wants to reserve along the waterfront, or will it be the 99% who are seeking a decent place to live in this city?
I promise we'll come back to the 1 and 99 question in one moment, but I would like Mark Farrell to respond to Lee's question, which I understood to suggest that there are no guarantees here, that there could be a loophole so that the money that is being generated for affordable housing actually wouldn't go there. Do we know for sure that it will go there?
Yes, that is part of the project that we have approved at the Board of Supervisors that Yes on B reflects. And that's why San Franciscans should vote Yes on B. And to Mayor Agnos's point, I think the hyperbole is truly astounding here. The irony here is when people say, let's build affordable housing on site, we're going to build less affordable housing in San Francisco than if we built it elsewhere in our city. With redevelopment having gone away, we are in a crisis here in San Francisco about affordable housing, and we have less public funds than ever. And if we can take some of the most expensive real estate in Northern California and in San Francisco and extract a maximum amount of money to buy housing elsewhere. And by the way, I appreciate the comment in the picture in the Chronicle. I think the Bayview is an incredible neighborhood here in San Francisco, and we need to continue to promote it. And we should be building housing everywhere across San Francisco.
So let me ask the question this way, to go with Mayor Agnos's 1% versus the 99. Is your argument, Tim Kolin, that, yeah, you bet, we're gonna have this be for the 1% because actually that's what would benefit the 99 because it would raise more money to support those 99?
In simple terms, yes. And the idea that this is some kind of working-class waterfront is sort of alien because right 50 yards from the project site, you've got some very, very fancy condos and a couple of plutocrats who are protecting their views have chipped in, what, $500,000 to protect their views. So the idea that there's no people of means or we've got to keep these people out, this is the waterfront on very valuable
there's another
land.
Word. Okay, there's another word for what Tim Kolin just agreed is his philosophy here. It's called trickle-down. And it hasn't worked in other places, and it doesn't work in San Francisco either. Their plan and what they're doing and what the Board of Supervisors and the Lee administration is doing now is approving almost exclusively luxury high-end housing with this idea
but John,
that they'll build affordable housing someday.
Let me press you on that because it's not exactly trickle-down because it's saying this – it's creating X amount of money that would be used to create affordable housing. It's not just sort of saying we're going to toss you a few crumbs.
Oh, that is what it's saying. Well, let's talk about this project. $500 to $600 million is what these condos are going to sell for. The developer before the board – last year said they'd be the most expensive condos in history of San Francisco. $2 million for a studio, $10 million at the top. They're planning to put $11 million in. That's a fraction. If this is their argument that they're going to put money into a fund, especially on public land, they should put in $100 million if they're going to claim it's neighborhood housing as their ads.
Let's hear from a few more of our listeners. Jim, you're next. Jim, are you with us? Go ahead, please.
Yes. Okay. What kind of city are we going to have if we allow a few very rich neighbors to go out and hire paid signature gatherers and oppose projects that have been fully vetted by the city process?
Well, let me say this. The city of San Francisco is what it is because the people who live here in all parts have stood up and used the ballot box in many occasions. And we would have not have height limits anymore if the ballot box process weren't available.
But the question that Jim is raising is a significant one, and we've seen this play out all over the state, not just here in San Francisco, but it's essentially saying, you know, we have representative government. We have agencies whose job it is to review these matters. Let's let them do their job.
The news is sometimes they fail.
And they make mistakes, like the Embarcadero Freeway, like Fontana East and West. There are all kinds of mistakes that litter this city with decisions that were made by politicians. I'm one of them, so I take the blame, and regulatory bodies who made mistakes, and the people correct it. This is a chance to avoid another mistake on the waterfront.
Mark, you want to come back on that?
There's a great organization here in San Francisco, SPUR, and they wrote a great endorsement piece for Yes on B and Yes on C about why we should not be doing ballot box planning for our land use decisions here in San Francisco. The voters of San Francisco this year, it's a little bit of a more quiet ballot with fewer items on the ballot. But when the voters of San Francisco get down to propositions BB and CC because we have 30 things to vote on, we should not be forced as residents of San Francisco as voters to vote on projects like this. Again, this has been vetted for 7 years. Passed 5 different commissions, twice at the Board of Supervisors. This is exactly what you have government there for. And I appreciate the comments, but the only time you have people that put these items on the ballot is when they just don't like the outcome.
Well, let me just read a couple of listener comments because we're short on time and I want to give each of you a chance to sum up your arguments. Emily writes, what kind of business environment, what kind of environment generally are we going to have if we let a bunch of rich people undermine years of planning and approval by government bodies? Carolyn writes, I would like to know and have you clarify before the end of the program. She writes, I'm curious to know how much park and open space actually exists on the site today. So someone pick that up, please, in your last comments. Jeremy writes, the city needs to change the formula for affordable housing. Maybe it's acceptable to only require 10% of units to be affordable, but this type of ultra-luxury housing should have a much higher affordable housing requirement. And Carl tweets, how is low-income housing to be distributed across the city? Will it be a single location ghetto? So I'm going to ask you each to make a last thought and see if you can fold in some of those questions, if you would, please. Open space, what's there now? How will this improve it? And should we be doing more? Is $11 million enough? If this generates that much, should it actually be more if we're really going to get to what Mayor Agnos was describing as a city that's more affordable? I'm going to go back and forth on this. Tim, you start us
out. On the affordable housing, the $11 million is hugely significant. The city has a requirement of 12% on-site. They call it inclusionary, but on-site affordable housing. This project pays more than double that. It's a 25% rate that was negotiated with the city. There's no other project that I'm aware of that pays that kind of return on it. So they really are getting the value of the land for affordable housing.
John Gollinger, make your last plea on the no side, if you would, touch on the open space question.
Sure. I mean, ironic that they would argue against ballot box planning when they put Proposition B on the ballot. The developer wrote it behind closed doors.
Well, they put B on after C.
No, but B has other sweetheart provisions in it. Hasn't been before one committee before. That's why the Examiner, which supported the project, opposes B and C, and why the League of Women Voters, the Democratic Party, the Sierra Club do as well. On parks, all the environmental groups are against these propositions. You'd think if they created Golden Gate Park and the Embarcadero, as their ads purport to do, this would be something environmental groups would be for. They're against it because two-thirds of their supposed new open space and recreation is private and closed.
Mark Farrell, your last thoughts.
I think we should just take a step back as voters of San Francisco and say, what do we want at that location? Take a walk down to 8 Washington to that location today, or look at the website openupthewaterfront.org, and you'll see a concrete asphalt parking lot with a chain link fence around it and a health club that is boarded up. Do we want that, or do we want to build more housing in San Francisco, open up the streets, and open up the waterfront for everyone, have a vibrant waterfront, the continued extension of a vibrant waterfront that I want to see here in San Francisco, and at the same time set aside again over $11 million for affordable housing to fund the crisis that we have and create over 200 union construction jobs in the city? I think it's a no-brainer to vote yes on B.
By the way, both of the websites on both sides are on our side as well. Art Agnos, a last quick word.
Dave, this issue is about the livability of San Francisco in terms of height and bulk along our waterfront. Do we want it to be the accessible, beautiful place it's become since we took the Embarcadero down? And secondly, the affordability of city. Who will live in San Francisco? Will it be the people who made this city great, the middle class and the workers of the city, or will it be the people who can afford to buy $5 million condominiums?
And your favorite theme music is playing, which means we need to close. Art Agnos, John Gollinger, Tim Colon, Mark Farrell. Thanks all very much. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.